Hello, I'm Chris Baisden, an editor with AICPA's Journal of Accountancy. You're listening to the J of A podcast, where we talk about the key issues facing the accounting profession. In today's podcast, we're going to talk about how CPAs can protect themselves from having their data hacked. My guest is Nick Graff, who is an ethical hacker who works for CNA, an insurance company that provides professional liability insurance for CPAs. Hello, Nick. How are you today?
Doing great, Chris.
Great. So the first question I expect that most of our audience will have is about your job description, ethical hacker. That seems like something of a contradiction in terms. Can you tell us what it means to be an ethical hacker?
Absolutely, Chris. I'll admit that's a question I get frequently. You know, I like to say that I stress the ethical part of that. But being an ethical hacker, this is an official recognized certification, really no different than the certification in any other area of study. It shows a mastery of knowledge. In this case, you're learning, penetration testing techniques of how to compromise systems. In a word, really, you're learning how to think like the bad guys. The point being that if you can understand what the bad guys, the hackers, may be doing, you can better protect both yourself or the company that you're working for.
So that makes sense. But if you weren't one of the good guys, why would you be interested in hacking into a CPA firm system? And how would you go about doing it?
Good question. You know, these days, any size firm can be a target. And now, when I say target, I mean at least they could be compromised by a breach. You know, a large firm may have someone that goes specifically after them. But even small and medium-sized firms, while they may not be specifically targeted, they may still get caught up in the quote-unquote dragnet. If I were going to attack a business, the easiest way for me to do so would be through some sort of a social engineering attack or a phishing email. Unfortunately, the end user is always typically the easiest path towards the access of that data. It is much easier than, let's say, hacking like a web server or database server.
And can you give me a quick idea of what you mean by a phishing attack?
Sure. These are typically, most frequently will come through as an email. And the thing is, the bad guys have gotten really good at these. You know, 10 years ago, this might have been the Nigerian prince who was going to wire you money. You know,
right.
I think we've all seen that, and those were pretty easy to identify as not real. But these days, the bad guys have gotten much better. Not only will they do simple things like use spell check, but they'll also use real world events and time their attacks around there. Coming up later this week is April 15th when taxes are due. I can tell you, every year we see a huge increase in phishing attacks where the bad guys are purporting to be the IRS, saying either that they have you have a large tax return, just enter in your information here so we can make that deposit, or they'll say on the opposite side, you owe a bunch of money and we're going to start garnishing your wages. Click here to ensure that doesn't happen. We've also seen them pretend to be like the Red Cross around when disasters strike. Doing any of these things, again, that seem very legitimate and can be much more difficult to identify.
So what's the process like when a hacker gets into your system? Say, you click on one of those phishing emails. What are they going to start doing? It's a little bit different than it was maybe a few years ago, right?
Absolutely. When we go back 10, 15 years, attackers at the time, most times when they got into systems, the point was more to make a statement. They might deface the company's website. So instead of seeing yahoo.com, you might see, a political statement posted up there in the time being. They would break into the systems and they would be, loud and noisy, proverbially, make a lot of do activity that was very noticeable to the organization. These days, it's really quite the opposite. What drives and motivates today's hackers is money. So they're looking to get in and get sensitive data. So when they breach a system, they're going to look to be as quiet as possible. Beyond that, they're going to want to, gain that persistent access to allow them to perform reconnaissance on the network. They don't necessarily know where that data may be stored, but over hours and days and weeks, they will move their way through the network and figure out where a database is that maybe has sensitive credit card information. And then once they've found it, try to quietly exfiltrate it from the network for their purposes of selling it or other nefarious issues.
And how would you know that they were even in there? How would you catch them at that point?
That's a good question. You know, many times, unfortunately, what is a tell that a company's been hacked is that we see their information pop up on the dark web. For example, Target, when they were breached in 2013, one of the first reporters to notice it was Brian Krebs, and he saw again that a bunch of Target cards, millions of Target credit cards, were being posted for sale on the dark web, and that was the first inkling that something may have happened. You know, you can put in systems that can help detect. There are, you know, intrusion detection systems, intrusion prevention systems, but none of those are perfect. None of those are a, you know, quote unquote silver bullet. So that it can be difficult to even tell that you've been breached.
So your discussion of Target and the credit cards gets us into the thing that I'd like to talk about next. What do hackers do once they found some information in a CPA firm system that they can use? Where do they take it? What do they try to do with it?
Sure. Monetizing it typically is their goal. One of the big attacks we unfortunately see hitting just about everyone these days, at least from individual users to, small, medium-sized firms to government organizations and hospitals, is ransomware. I'm sure some of our listeners may have heard about it on the news or read about it, but this is a piece of malware that'll get installed on your machine, typically through, clicking on a link in an email or, downloading free software. And just like we talked about, it'll be very quiet. It won't say that it's doing anything, but quietly in the background, it will encrypt your files. And typically we think of encryption as a good thing, but this is, it's locking up data. But in this case, it's using encryption against you. So it's locking you out of your files. And so once it's encrypted all of your data, it's then going to pop up a message saying you've been hit by a crypto locker, which is a variant of it. You now have 72 hours to pay a sum of money, usually a few hundred dollars, in bitcoins, which are digital currency that is very difficult to trace. And typically the bad guys, they're using the encryption properly. Like, I am not going to break that encryption. The government's not going to break that encryption. So if you don't have a backup of data to recover from, your best course of action may be, unfortunately, paying that ransom. These just go out and hit everybody, unfortunately.
And there's some other things they could do too, right? You and I had talked prior to this conversation, and you mentioned something that was like the Amazon.com of the black market. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. So there was a site, and there are many sites, but here's one example is a site called Silk Road. It's been shut down, but it was very active for a number of years. And like you said, this was kind of like the Amazon.com one-stop shopping for just about any black market item you could think of. I mean, in this case, you could definitely buy stolen identities, you could buy stolen healthcare information, credit card information, but you could buy just about anything else you wanted there too. And it's through these markets that an attacker who's come into a sum of data, credit cards, et cetera, will kind of sell off or even auction off this information to the highest bidder, who then will hope to then perform credit card fraud or other fraud to again gain money from this transaction.
Okay. And tell me a little bit more about the types of data that they might try to sell on that Amazon.com of the black market. Are we talking about tax return info? We're talking about credit card info? Give me an idea.
Yeah. Sure. So yeah, so any sort of financially related information is some of the most frequently traded data that we see. Obviously, we can all clearly understand why credit card information could be valuable, or even other tax return information that could be used even for identity theft, so they could open up new lines of credit in your name or loans, things of that nature. We've also seen insurance information, like health insurance information, become a target. That there have been instances where people then can file false insurance claims for things like pharmaceuticals and potentially even medical procedures using someone else's medical identity. Beyond that, even one further that we've seen is the sale of medical records. Of just for an example, they've seen in China that clean chest x-rays are being sold on the black market. The purpose being that if you're looking to emigrate to the U.S., one of the things you need to prove is that you don't have tuberculosis. A way to prove that is showing a clean chest x-ray. And so they're showing now that people are buying these clean chest x-rays so that they can submit them as proof to enable their immigration status to another country, which again is something mind-blowing, something you would never even think would be valuable. But this stuff is happening today.
Wow, that's crazy. I hadn't even heard about that. So we've talked about some of the scary stuff, some of the things that go bump in the night. What can CPA firms do to protect themselves from that?
Great question. One that we get all the time. I think the first thing just to know is that, there is no silver bullet. A lot of security firms will make a lot of claims about what their product can do, but just know that no product is perfect. No product by itself is going to automatically make you hack-proof or, data breach-proof, et cetera. But that said, there are things that a company, a CPA firm, can do. My top three, first off, would be security awareness training of your employees. We talked about it before that employees, unfortunately, can usually be the easiest pathway to nefarious access of data. So training your employees about how these social engineering and phishing attacks occur, what to look for in emails, and even sometimes these will occur via phone calls, can really help protect an organization, because an employee clicking on a random link in an email can easily bypass a number of other security protections that may have been put in place to protect that corporate data. Next is good password management. And again, this one is, it's easy to say, but it is hard to do. Unfortunately, all of us have, probably what, tens, 50, 100 different accounts that we use on a regular basis between, work, emails and accounts and your cell phone and your bank, et cetera. Best practice is, of course, to use, long, unique, complex passwords for each of those accounts. But that's not feasible to remember them all in your head, of course, So one thing we recommend is that if a way to do this is there are password managers out there. These are usually services that some are free, some cost a very small amount of money, but they will allow you to manage your passwords. Like when I sit down at my computer using a password manager, I log on with my one master password. And then as I go throughout my day going to my bank or my email or credit card site, this service will log me into each one of those sites using unique complex passwords that I don't even have to remember. And the point being that let's say my bank's website gets hacked. The good thing I know now is that the password they have recovered that the bad guys got from that site only gives them access to my bank. If I was reusing that password in other places, all of a sudden I may have to worry about 10, 20, or 30 other websites where I've reused that password. And the bad guys know this. When they get passwords, they will automatically go try them other places because they know people reuse their passwords. So good password management is another key thing that a company can do to help protect themselves.
And I think you were saying there was one last one, multi-factor authentication, right?
Yeah. So multi-factor authentication, and this is one that we can dig in a little bit more about it. But using multi-factor authentication in places like remote access, like if you allow your employees to VPN in to the company from remote locations, that's a great place to put multi-factor authentication.
So what are the three factors of authentication and how would it work in a CPA firm? Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, sure. So this term multi-factor authentication kind of sounds like gibberish, but it's actually a fairly easy terminology to understand. So really there are three factors of authentication. They can be something that you know, like in your mind, something that you have physically in your possession, or something that you are. And so something that you know is something we're all familiar with. Something you know is a password. So if you've memorized a password in your mind, that's one factor of authentication. Something that you have, again, it's physical possession. Historically, we maybe have seen those little plastic RSA tokens. It was a little dongle that went on your keychain and have a string of 6 or 8 digit number that would automatically change every 30 seconds. And so you didn't need to remember that number. You just had to have that little token with you. So you'd enter in your password and then type in the number, whatever was displayed on there, and that would allow you access. And then the last one, something that you are, again, we're probably all more familiar with it than we think. It's biometric. So it could be your fingerprint. It could be an iris scan. But if you have an iPhone of recent vintage, almost all of them now have a fingerprint reader on there. And so it is a combination, any two of those three, that gives you that multi-factor authentication.
That's great. So this has been some great information, and I wanted to wrap it up. But before I do, I felt like I needed to ask you one final thing, and that is, what's your favorite hacker pop culture? Would it be War Games, The Matrix, Mr. Robot?
Oh, man. Actually, I would say Mr. Robot would be probably one of my favorites. It was funny. I hadn't seen the first season and had a bunch of people when I was out speaking say, you've got to watch the show. And it is phenomenal, not only because is it well-written, but they use hacking techniques realistically. They talk about real techniques. They use them properly. And the amount of research they put into to make that show real, I always greatly appreciate. It's a fantastic show if you haven't seen it.
That's great. Thanks, Nick. And I'd also like to thank our audience for listening today. If you enjoyed this podcast, check out more JFA podcasts on our website and on Podomatic.